Good morning, everyone. This is Tim Hooks, and thanks for joining us for another podcast on Office 365 with Microsoft. Today we have Larry Kuhn on the line. And Larry, I'm going to turn it over to you to introduce yourself, and then we'll start talking about licensing and Microsoft Office.
Sounds terrific. Thanks, Tim. Good morning, everybody, or afternoon or evening, whatever time you're listening. It's Larry Kuhn. I'm with Microsoft. I'm a technology strategist based in Chicago, and I'm a vendor liaison point of contact for ILTA within the Microsoft organization. So very happy to be here and talk Office 365 licensing today.
Thanks a lot for being for participating in this. This is really helpful. And, you know, last time we talked a little bit about sort of what is different with Office 365 versus, you know, Office 2013 and older versions. Today, I want to talk a little bit about licensing. And my understanding is that the Microsoft licensing agreements have changed to more of a subscription model. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that, like how, you know, could I still go out and buy it off the shelf if I wanted to, or is it subscription only, or how does that work today?
Yeah, happy to expand on that. So what we've done with the Office 365 licensing model is we've provided an additional option. So the traditional means of acquiring software from Microsoft is still available as of today. So you can walk into, if you're a home user, you can walk into a retail store and you can buy a full-blown copy of Office Professional 2013, you know, a one-time purchase and have a perpetual use right to that version of the product. If you're an enterprise with an enterprise agreement with Microsoft, you can continue to purchase the clients using the perpetual license model and then, you know, optionally pay software assurance year over year, which provides you rights to upgrades as new versions of the product come along. But regardless of whether you pay software assurance or not, you're always entitled to use that initial version that you bought the license for. So that model is still in place and still available if that's what your preference is. But the subscription model is what we've introduced to provide a lower initial cost of entry and provide a simpler mechanism for access to upgrades. So with the subscription model, you're going to pay a small monthly fee, and you'll be entitled always to the latest version of the software as long as you keep your subscription active. And the subscription plans in the enterprise, we still negotiate an enterprise agreement on a three-year basis. You still make annual payments against that subscription, so you're kind of prepaying for a year's worth of subscription service in advance every time you make an annual enterprise agreement payment.
That's good news. My next question is, can you talk about sort of the different flavors of the subscription? So I understand there's Office 365 Premium and then an Office 365 E3. Can you talk a little bit about the differences with those?
Sure. So actually what I'll do is I'll start all the way on the low end and work my way up. So, and low end being kind of the scope or the audience that the license, that the subscription accommodates. In the home market, we have Office 365 Personal Edition, and that is access to just the client applications and OneDrive, the consumer service, and that's $6.99 a month. And that would be ideal for a single-person household, you know, an individual for their own personal use. Then moving up one step, we have Office 365 Home. That's $9.99 a month. But for that small additional increase, now you have the rights to install the Office clients on up to 5 PCs, and you can share that subscription with 4 other individuals. So that Office 365 Home subscription can cover, you know, 5 folks in your household or, you know, friends, anyone that you want to share the subscription with. So that's a very economical way for home users to get their hands on the full rich Office client experience. Segueing over then to business side of things, we have 3 different offerings there. We have Office 365 Business Essentials, and this is our lowest priced business plan. And it focuses on providing an online experience. So this would be very comparable from a capability standpoint to, you know, what you would find with Google Apps, so to speak. So, you know, everything is in the web browser. You have the online versions of Word, Excel, PowerPoint. You have a terabyte of file storage per user. You do get email, 50 gigabyte inbox on that. And you also have access to Skype for Business. But everything is in the cloud. So the thing that Small Business Essentials lacks is the rich client applications. So stepping up one more step, then we have Office 365 Business, and it's kind of the opposite. So it focuses on providing you the rich client apps experience. It does allow you access to OneDrive, and you still get a terabyte of OneDrive storage. The things that you don't get with 365 Business are the email, the SharePoint, the link, or Skype for Business. So then to round out our small business licensing, we have 365 Business Premium, and that combines those other two business options. 9 times out of 10, when I'm talking to a small business, you know, if you're a maybe 25-person shop or something like that, 365 Business Premium is probably going to be the most appropriate licensing model for you, because it gives you both the rich client applications and all the online services backing it. So that rounds out the business category. And then the last category that we have.
Well, let me call, ask before you go on the business category, like three you just discussed, for example,
yes.
Is there any numbers around like a minimum of 5 users or, you know, if you get to 99 users, these don't apply anymore or anything like that?
Yes.
I could just get, for example, 27 if that's how many employees I had and pay it.
Right, exactly. You go by the number of users in your organization, and there's no minimum. So you could start with one person. There is a maximum, and it's kind of a recommended maximum. I do think that we're a little flexible on this, but we kind of recommend that once an organization reaches a user population of about 250 or 300 users, that they're really approaching that size where it would make more sense for them to move over into the enterprise licenses. So there's no minimum. You know, on the upper end, we kind of set people's expectation that it's 250 or less.
Okay, that makes sense. It's probably financially better for them to make a switch at 250 anyway. So.
Right, that's right, because that's where you start to open up your options for different open, select, and enterprise agreement licensing options, Microsoft.
Okay, please continue.
Okay, so we'll move into discussing then the enterprise licenses. So they're just like there were 3 over on the business side that I talked about, there are 3 over here on the enterprise side, and they're fairly similar. Office 365 Enterprise E1, that's your online-focused subscription. So, again, it gives you access to all of the online services we talked about before. In the enterprise space, though, we do have a couple of additional online services that are available. So one is the corporate video portal. So this is a new capability that we added to Office 365 recently. It's kind of an enterprise YouTube experience. So it's secured access, private access only to members of your organization. So that's the online one, the E1. Next, we have Office 365 Pro Plus, and that's the enterprise-level subscription that focuses uniquely and solely on the Office-rich client applications. So Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, Access are included in that license, as well as file storage with OneDrive for Business. And then the final enterprise license I'll talk about is Office 365 E3, and that really kind of combines the first 2 enterprise licenses that I talked about. Again, when I'm talking with business customers, usually the starting point is E3 because it addresses the broadest set of needs in the enterprise and has the richest set of functionality.
And E3 still includes, and this might be interesting for law firms, but some legal hold capabilities and some archiving capabilities for when there's a legal hold in place and that kind of thing. Is that still the same?
Yes, definitely the case. So the email storage capability that's included in both the E1 and the E3 is backed by Exchange Online, and that's what we're running in our cloud service to provide the Exchange or the email capability. And in the E3 subscription, you have the access and the ability on the administrator side to go into that Exchange Compliance Center and perform e-discovery across Exchange mailboxes. And we're also enhancing the SharePoint and OneDrive services to integrate that with the e-discovery capabilities as well. So we've made a number of announcements about that. There were just some more updates to that just last week, where we're rolling out in phases, adding more and more capability so that you have a consistent legal hold and e-discovery capability that goes across all of the cloud services.
I never thought they'd find those documents in OneDrive. I'll have to move them now. So I guess I have two more questions sort of around the licensing. And one of them is, a lot of law firms use the home use licensing program. And so I understand that's different. If I bought 2013, in the first scenario you described at the beginning of this,
right.
I assume that's still not available. Yeah, the home use program probably is still not available with that. And then my second question is, well, I'll let you answer that one first.
Yeah, so the terms and capabilities offered in the software assurance model with perpetual licensing, those remain intact. So if you purchase Office 2013 license, and then you maintain software assurance, the software assurance benefit provides access to the home use program, and that remains in place. Now, if you're moving over and say you go to the Office 365 Pro Plus subscription, what we do instead is we grant, through license terms, the ability for any licensed user to install one of their five copies on a computer that they choose. So that becomes the substitute for the home use program in the subscription model. So, I'm Bobby, employee of the firm, and I have one installed and activated copy on my desktop machine in the office. But, with administrator approval in your organization, you can control whether you allow or disallow it. But Microsoft's licensing terms do allow it. Bobby can go home and log in with his enterprise ID to the Office 365 portal, and he can download and install the Office client and activate it on his home machine. Now, the way that that's better than the old home use program is Microsoft is taking responsibility for managing your license compliance in the home use scenario. Under the old home use program, you might recall that the way you did it was you provided an access code to your employees, they sent an email, they got a link, and then they downloaded and installed a perpetual license copy of the software. Now, the challenge for enterprises there is if Bobby leaves the firm, the license terms say that Bobby's no longer allowed to take advantage of the home use program benefit. So technically, by letter of the license, it's up to the firm to make sure that Bobby uninstalls and discontinues the use of his home use copy of Office 2013 in that case. Contrast that with the subscription model. Because the copy that's installed at home is activated, integrated together with his enterprise email address and his enterprise account, when Bobby leaves the firm disables access to his account, and after a grace period expires, his home copy will be deactivated automatically. So the firm doesn't have to worry about a license compliant issue with any home users after that point, because our cloud licensing activation service takes care of disabling or deactivating his home copy.
Okay. Well, a couple more questions around that. In the home use program, if Bobby, for example, installed Microsoft Office and then he went to work for the day, and he left his computer at home, his home computer.
Mm-hmm.
And another family member used that computer. Microsoft Office would be available to them, for example, to do a homework assignment or something like that.
That's right.
Would they still be able to do that in this scenario, or is it tied to Bobby's user account at the office? So he would have to log in with his enterprise user ID and password, or?
That's an excellent question. And the good news is that Bobby doesn't have to be there at home. Bobby doesn't have to even be logged in on the home machine. Once, the only time he needs to do that is when he first installs and activates that copy. The activation, the standard activation process activates the copy of Office on a machine for all users of the machine. So if you had separate profiles for each member of the household, as we would recommend on a Windows machine at home, each user would be able to log into that home workstation, go to their own desktop, and they would see the Office applications and would be able to launch them and so on. So the activation is a machine-level activation.
Okay, that's good news. Well, it sort of begs another question, and that is, in order to get Microsoft Office installed on Bobby's computer at the office, does Bobby have to log in and run the install, or does he have to activate it in some way so that, you know, we know Bobby's using one at the office, and now we know he's using two of his five, for example?
Yeah.
Yeah, how does that work exactly? The way firms, you know, I'm sure a lot of companies, in fact, just, you know, they image a machine, they put Microsoft Office on it, it's licensed for the enterprise in some way. Does that change?
Yes, I'll contrast the activation with kind of the MSI install for the perpetual license product. What people would have done in the past, as you said, they would image the machine and they would have a KMS server, a key management server in their enterprise. And when that machine was booted up for the first time, the copy of Office on that machine would present its product key to the KMS server in your enterprise, and then that's how it would be activated. That's kind of the old approach. With the new approach, it's very similar. You image the machine with a copy of Office 365 Pro Plus on the machine, but the first time that the end user logs into the machine to set up and their profile is set up, what we're going to do is, instead of going to that KMS server in your on-premise environment, we're going to go to the licensing service in Office 365, and we'll present that enterprise user's credentials, and we'll verify that you had assigned a license to that user in the Office 365 portal. And that can happen either interactively in the simplistic case, so for very small businesses that have a less sophisticated environment and less sophisticated deployment process, you can just let the user be prompted to log in. But there are mechanisms where you can do silent installs, and as long as you have Active Directory Federation services set up in your environment, the activation process all happens silently in the background. The reason that we need Active Directory Federation services is that we do a single sign-in operation from the point where the user launches Office for the first time. We're able to use their Windows login identity, pass that to the ADFS server to get a login credential token that then is relayed back into the licensing service in Office 365 online, and that activation can happen silently.
Okay. That makes sense. Well, I'm sorry, that just begs one more question. I'm worried about Bobby, and because sometimes Bobby goes down the hall and he uses somebody else's computer. Does that count against one of his five, or is it only the first person that launches it on a particular machine in the office?
Generally speaking, it's the first person. So, you know, if, say, Bobby goes down the hall to help somebody else out and he logged in, he might even create a profile on that machine. Just like we talked about in the home use scenario, if Office was already activated on that machine, it was activated by the first person, and it's a machine-wide activation. So no second activation would happen for the second or subsequent users on a machine. Now, that's kind of the general case for individually assigned workstations. But your question actually leads me to another good scenario to talk about, and that's what we call shared computers. So you might think of or consider things like a kiosk or maybe a dedicated conference room machine, or perhaps even a Citrix server where you have multiple people logging in and you have multiple shared sessions on the computer over the course of the day. We have an option in the Office 365 licensing activation. This is an administrator-controlled option. You configure it at install time, and you tell the Office 365 Pro Plus installer that the machine is a shared computer. And then what we do is we shift away from, instead of using machine-wide user activation, we use individual session-based activation. So each user that logs onto the machine is going to temporarily activate on that workstation. So that's an important distinction. We've talked a lot about how each user has 5 copies that they can install. The shared activation, that temporary activation, does not count against those 5. So I can go, visit 15 different conference rooms, through the course of my business day and log in and do a shared computer temporary activation in all 15 of those conference rooms, and I won't run into a problem. It won't decrement any of my 5 machine licenses.
Well, that is, that's a lot to digest, but it's a lot of good information. I was going to ask you a little bit about, just briefly, what's included as far as applications, like, for example, in E3. But before I do that, did you want to share anything else on licensing? Because now we're kind of looking at a product suite. Before we change gears, I just wanted to see if you had anything else you wanted to add that I didn't ask about.
Well, one thing that I wanted to make sure that the audience is aware of, especially for the home scenario, is that there are a lot of other ways that you can get a hold of Office these days besides through your workbook. Folks probably have started to notice, and I'm sure we'll see more of this as we move into the back-to-school and the holiday season, but many new computers, tablets especially, depending on the OEM preference, that is, are coming with a free first year subscription for the Office 365 Personal. So that's one way that you might get access. Another way is through our educational programs. So Microsoft announced several months ago that any licensed educational institution that has enterprise licensing with Microsoft, we provided a new benefit to those educational institutions, which is that we provide a copy of Office to any of their students. So there's a website that Microsoft has set up where you can just, as a student, type in your institution-issued EDU email address, and we will let you know if you're entitled to a copy of Office through that mechanism. So, if you're a grad school student or a college student and maybe even some high school and elementary schools, maybe their school districts have enterprise agreements, and if you get a institution-issued email address, you might be entitled to a copy of Office via those means.
That sounds great. Okay.
So you wanted to talk a little bit about what's included. Let me go through just the E3 SKU. We'll focus on that because
okay.
I think that's the most common target that your audience will be looking at. So
okay. It's
the full set of Office client applications. So it's 5 installs per user of the desktop software, either Windows or Mac. 5 installs of tablet software, that's iOS, Android, or Windows tablet. And then unlimited installs of Office for the phones. So we have Office versions, which now include Outlook native clients, for for iOS, for Android, and for Windows phones. So that's the client. It's email, which is taken care of from Exchange Online. It's SharePoint Sites, which is taken care of from SharePoint Online. It's OneDrive for Business, which is also taken care of by SharePoint Online. It's Skype for Business. It's Yammer. It's Delve. And it's Video. So Yammer, Delve, and Video, those are enterprise class services. They're not included in those smaller business plans we talked about earlier.
Okay. And can you briefly tell us, like a 30,000 foot, a little more about Yammer and Delve? And is it safe to assume when you say video, you mean like video conferencing capabilities? Is that what video means?
Let me break each of those out. I'll start with video. So the video service that I'm talking about, that's not video conferencing. So Skype for Business does provide web-based video conferencing. So point-to-point video messaging, that's included in Skype for Business.
Okay.
The Office 365 video service that I referred to, that is more like YouTube for the enterprise. Let's say that you, have a video recorded training session and you want to make that available on demand within your enterprise. You would take that MP4 file, upload it into the video service. The video service will take care of transcoding that video so that it can play back on all of the different devices and bandwidth options that people have. And then they can sign into the video portal and go and view that video online. So that's what the video service is.
And that video service, that's a hosted service, correct?
Yes, it is. It's completely hosted in the cloud. So there's no on-premise version or option for the video service.
Okay.
Same thing with Yammer, actually. So to move on to that, Yammer is only in the cloud. And Yammer is enterprise social messaging and social interaction tools. So it's microblogging, kind of a Facebook-looking interface where users can go and they can post on different topics. You can set up groups in there. And people can like and comment and reply to those posts in Yammer. It's great knowledge sharing tool. It's great for supporting, like help desk facts or, FAQs where, people are calling in all the time with the same problems and you already know what the solution is. It's real easy to capture that in a Yammer group and then, people can self-service, check out Yammer first before they dial up the help desk. And then the last new service, this is just kind of emerging right now, just came out of what we call our first release program, where we provide early access to customers who opt in to see new features. Just emerged out of that category, and now it's in general release. The Delve service is kind of a search-based discovery. So what Delve does is it provides a web page that will show you, surface to you information about what your coworkers are working on, as long as you have access to the material. So it's all security trimmed and, you'll never see something that you don't have access to. But what it does is it really fosters the serendipitous discovery of information. So we know who your coworkers and colleagues are that you're emailing with. We know what documents you're saving and publishing that have, public visibility. And we use that information to suggest to you material that might be of interest.
Interesting. That sounds very interesting. I could see that potentially farther down the road being useful when it comes time to enter your time at a law firm. So.
Sure. Yeah, or if you're working on, workflow example that I give in the law firm context is you might have intellectual property lawyers working on the East and West Coast on completely different cases. Delve might be able to discover that obviously you're focused on the same area of law and maybe you're both working on patent cases that relate to some particular precedent. That might, you're not regularly interacting because you're not in the same office location. You would have no other way of discovering that the other person was out there working on something very similar. So it's kind of somebody used the terminology, it's like an electronic water cooler. And I think that's a pretty good analogy.
Yeah, that's excellent. Okay. I had some other questions, but really you've answered quite a few of them. One of the questions still outstanding. I happen to use Office 365 E3, so I understand how to assign and unassign licenses. So that makes sense to me. If I replace, a person gets replaced by a new person, I could just unassign the old license from the portal and reassign it, and everything would work out fine, and it would take care of their five devices and so on. One of the questions I had is Visio and Microsoft Project. Those are still separate SKUs. Is that right?
Yes, they are. So okay. Similar to the rest of the base Office 365 suite, we still have the perpetual license option for Visio and Project, but we also have an online subscription option for Visio and Project. And if you purchase either of those subscriptions, you would add them into the same Office 365 tenant. It would just be an additional license that you assign to a user.
Okay, that makes sense. And a little bit lower cost of entry on the subscription model, I take it there as well.
Quite definitely.
Okay. I think my last question, at least unless you give me an answer, I have more questions about. But you know, well, if, for example, a company were to go with the E3 licensing, but they didn't want to turn, they didn't want users being able to access every part of that. Like maybe they don't want Yammer, or maybe they don't, maybe they just don't want them to use, like, I don't know, this is sort of silly, but let's say they don't want them to use Excel for some reason. Is there a way to deal with not giving them, you know, the whole kit and caboodle?
Yeah, there definitely are ways. So the ways vary a little bit across the different service areas, but I'll start at the high level, kind of the big switch way, is that you can simply withhold a license for that particular service. So the granularity there is what I listed off when I was going through the components of 365 before. So you've got the Office client. There's a license switch there. So that's kind of all or nothing for all the Office clients. And then I'll come back to the granularity options on that one. Then there's Exchange. So big switch there, on or off if you want them to have a mailbox in the cloud or not. There's SharePoint Online. There's a big switch there. That switch turns off both SharePoint sites and OneDrive for Business at present. So that's
okay.
To keep in mind. Skype for Business, there's a big switch there. So assign or withhold a license on that. Delve is actually included as part of the SharePoint Online license, and video is included in the SharePoint Online license. So those are controllable from inside the permissions of SharePoint. And then Yammer is, it shows up as a license, but you can't withhold it from a user. Everybody who has an enterprise email address, be it from an on-premise mailbox or an Exchange Online mailbox, is going to be entitled to use Yammer. So that one you have to control inside the Yammer user interface. So let me come back to the Office clients, though, because you asked about what if I don't want them to have Excel. That is doable, but that, rather than being a licensing operation, that's a deployment operation. Your desktop deployment team has the tools and capabilities to configure at install time which components, we call them, but you could think of them as Office applications, which of those are excluded from the install process. So you could selectively exclude Excel and Word if you wanted to, and then just install all the rest of the parts of Office Pro Plus.
And so on the Office Pro Plus, I assume you could then still, there's still, I'm trying to think what it's called, the Office Resource Kit, where you customize the installation and you could say, I want these settings in Word and I want these settings in Excel. That kind of thing is all still available even on the subscription model.
Yes, quite definitely. So
the
Office desktop client apps use the same group policy objects. They use the same configuration settings. So the Office resource kit that you've used in the past, those kind of mechanisms still work for customizing an install. Now, the part about excluding an application from being installed or whatnot, there's a new tool in the mix that you use in combination with those other existing tools, and that's called the Office Deployment Tool, ODT.
Okay.
And the Office Deployment Tool is the desktop deployment administrator's mechanism to pull down a copy of Office Pro Plus off of the Microsoft Content Delivery Network and then configure it before installing it onto a workstation.
Okay, that sounds great. I know law firms in particular are like to customize those things because it makes a big difference. So,
yep.
Well, that's great. I you know, when I first heard about all this, I was sort of imagining users going to a marketplace and installing their own Microsoft Office. It sounded a little bit scary to me at first pass, so this has been very helpful to help get a better idea of how it works and functionality-wise and license-wise. So I appreciate you taking some time again on this podcast. This is great information. And again, your name is Larry Kuhn. My name is Tim Hooks. We are going to do some more of these in the future. We're trying to stay on a schedule here of about every 2 weeks. So look for more. And if you have ideas, please put them in the idea database. And we'll try to address your questions around Office 365. Thanks, everybody, for participating. Larry, thank you.
You bet.
Have a great day, everybody.